Hi,
this is Take Charge Your Health with Corinne Fornari, clinical nutritionist, clinician assistant, and Carol Peterson, pharmacist.
Listen, learn, and I hope you enjoy the show. Bye.
Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health with Corinne Fornari, clinical nutritionist and physician assistant, and my co-host, Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Every week, we present you with new and creative ways to help you make sense of health information and bring it home to you and your family. With years of clinical experience between us and research into traditional and cutting-edge technologies, we give you practical information to help you take charge of your health. Welcome back. Today we have a very special show. I'm quite excited about it. We've invited back Dr. Michael Platt, the author of The Miracle of Bioidentical Hormones, Adrenaline Dominance, and a new book, The Platt Protocol for Hormone Balancing. And that's directed toward practitioners working. The last book is directed toward practitioners working with patients with a bioidentical or natural hormone balance. So needless to say, you all know this is our favorite subject. So I'm here with my co-host,
Carol Peterson.
And guess what, Carol? We get to talk about our favorite subject today.
Hormones.
And we're speaking with Dr. Michael Platt. Can you introduce him for us, please?
Well, Dr. Platt, I had the pleasure of meeting you. I believe it was a hormone conference some time ago, and I've met with you many more times and talked to you lots more times, and especially after your adrenaline book, which I think is quite unique, and I think we'll be talking about that quite a bit. So Dr. Platt is board certified in internal medicine. I would like to read this off his website, if you permit me. He said, "You can never go wrong treating a person, but you can be led astray by treating a lab test." When you take time to talk to a person one-on-one in a comprehensive way, it allows you to fully understand their unique set of circumstances and symptoms. In this way, you are truly able to more accurately and effectively guide them on their journey to health. So how appropriate to welcome you to our show, Take Charge of Your Health, Dr. Platt. Welcome.
Well, hi there.
Hi. Where should we start? One of the things that has been bothering me, I started participating in some Facebook pages on hormone therapies, bioidentical hormone therapies. And one of the things I'd like to have you explore with us is the use of pellets. And then I am alarmed in part because I'm feeling people are getting pellets. And I think some of the problems that some people have with these pellet insertions of hormones may be directly related to progesterone, but I don't know. I would love to have your feedback.
Can you explain pellets a little bit better? Or Dr. Platt, would you explain what pellets are to the audience? Because pellets is a word, but I don't think many people might not know what they really are.
Well, these pellets are actually surgically inserted. I mean, they make an incision through the skin and they insert pellets that are made up of various bioidentical hormones. Usually these are estradiol pellets or they're testosterone pellets. So those are basically the two pellets that are used. And I have to be honest with you, I'm not a big fan of pellets. And the reason for that is that once they're inserted, there's no way that you can titrate the dosage. And usually when it comes to hormones, it's important to be able to titrate the dosage because various things change. For example, if a woman has estrogen or estradiol pellets inserted and all of a sudden starts bleeding from the uterus and can't stop, well, basically, she's looking at having to have a hysterectomy. And the thing about testosterone, which pellets, which are inserted both for men and women, it can cause women to become very aggressive, you know. And the problem is, what, you know, when side effects start happening, you just have to wait for the, you know, for the hormone levels to die down. Frankly, between us and your listeners, I think pellets are mostly done by doctors who are just trying to generate income. This way, they can benefit from providing hormone advice and also getting paid to put pellets in, rather than writing out a prescription that can be filled at a compounding pharmacy. Now, the other problem I have is that estradiol, which is a very common pellet that's inserted into women, estrogen. When people read my books, they know I'm not a big fan of estrogen to begin with. But the thing is that anytime you give a woman a prescription for estrogen, especially estradiol, you need to protect her with progesterone, because progesterone, you know, sort of balances out the side effects. But the problem is that I have never known of a pellet doctor in this country. When they use estradiol, they always give a prescription for oral progesterone. And oral progesterone converts into another hormone called allopregnanolone, which is not progesterone. So they're not really being protected. Like I say, I'm not a big fan of pellets.
So I'm hearing side effects in women, and I'll say this is women. With the pellets, they're gaining weight, they're having acne, they're having rage, the mood stuff, and they're growing hair in undesirable places.
You know, that's the world of testosterone. That's why I say you can't control the side effects. You can with creams, but not with pellets.
So could that be mitigated with enough progesterone in a cream?
Are you talking about...
I'm talking about these things that are happening to women. They're given some progesterone, like you said. It seems to be oral most of the time. And progesterone cream might work better in this situation. Would it mitigate some of those effects that people are complaining about?
Well, progesterone won't prevent the weight gain from estradiol pellets. You know, estrogen is what's called a lipogenic hormone. It creates fat around the hips, the thighs, and buttocks. And even progesterone can't prevent that. Progesterone can prevent, you know, breast tenderness and cramps and PMS, and prevent against the cancer caused by estradiol. But it won't protect, you know, some of the other, you know, the weight gain from estradiol.
What I've found with the pellets, and I see people coming in with the pellets regularly, is that you have this consistent, even, never-ending dose of a hormone. Now, our bodies work differently than that. The hormones go up, they go down, they increase with a certain activity, they decrease at different times. It's not a constant. It's not like an on-off switch. Hormones surge and they drop. And in their surging, they're nourishing the tissue and nourishing the bones. And then they drop, and the body's allowed to rest. And you even feel it in energy surges and energy drops when your hormones are rotating. The thing about pellets is pellets are a strong, even dose. It blocks the body's ability to regulate any of this and just imposes itself on the person. And that's why I don't like these pellets at all either. And I feel like, yes, they are natural hormones, and so they're supposed to be wonderful, but... I don't see that at all. I see that people need to be able to regulate. They need the breaks. They need the reductions and the increases to help maintain mental and physical health.
It's an excellent point. Hormones, you're absolutely right. They go up and down during the day, during the week, during the month, and you're absolutely right about that.
But when you have a pellet, it can't. Your body can't.
Exactly right.
Can't create any regulation at all. Like, I have women, and I give them doses, and I give them creams as much as I can. And they say, well, what if it's not perfect? I say, don't worry. No problem. Well, what if I put on too much? That's okay. What if I put on too little? That's okay. Because you, as you get to know the hormones, some days you might want more, and that's okay. And other days you might want less, and that's okay. You're learning how to work with your body and with your needs and with your energy. And that's the wonderful part of natural hormone therapies, the ability to create these balances.
So far, we've been concentrating our conversation on women. What about treating men for hormone deficiency? Are men needing to supplement their hormones? Are they suffering from all sorts of symptoms because hormones are low? And what hormones and how should they be treated?
Interesting question. First of all, people have to realize that hormones control every system in the body. Everything is controlled by hormones. And if you don't mind my venting a little bit, doctors get actually very little training in hormones, even though they control every system. But yes, men do require hormones. And as men get older, just like with women, hormone levels go down. We can start maybe by talking about DHEA. And actually, they look at DHEA as a biological marker for aging because people with the highest DHEA levels have the greatest longevity. At one time in everybody's existence, DHEA, it stands for dehydroepiandrosterone. DHEA is actually the most prolific hormone in the body. And the thing about DHEA is that it downregulates into other hormones. So it's a very important hormone, has a lot of effects on the body. And like I say, this is a hormone that does go down as people get older. Now, the most famous hormone associated with men is testosterone, an incredibly important hormone for men, also for women, but also for men. And the testosterone helps, especially the heart. There are more testosterone receptor sites in heart tissue than anywhere else. And it's great for bones, and it's obviously great for building muscles. And men with very low testosterone levels always complain about fatigue. Energy is lacking. So that's a good hormone to replace, and usually the best way of replacing that is with testosterone cream obtained via a compounding pharmacy. But the thing about testosterone is that it's actually a controlled drug and requires a narcotics prescription, and it has to be written out by a doctor that has actually seen you. But another hormone that is rarely spoken about, which is also an incredibly important hormone for men, is progesterone.
Oh,
and
really?
I would say that 90% of the doctors in this country think that progesterone is a woman's hormone.
99.
And where?
Well, 99. Okay. It's just that they don't realize that men and women have the identical hormones, different levels, but the same hormones. And men stop making progesterone right around the age of 50. They stop making it. And the thing about progesterone is that it's a hormone that blocks insulin, and it's also a hormone that blocks estrogen. And what happens is after the age of 50, men start putting on weight around the middle because, that's where insulin puts on fat because they no longer have progesterone to block insulin. Uh-huh. And they start getting prostate cancer because they have nothing to protect them from estrogen. And, of course, prostate cancer is caused by estrogen. So it's obviously an important hormone to replace in men. And later on, we may be talking about adrenaline, which is another hormone that progesterone blocks. So in other words, progesterone is an incredibly important hormone. There are a lot of men that require thyroid. So yes, men do need hormones.
Progesterone, I've seen an article, The Forgotten Hormone in Men. Sleep issues are huge and could be relieved by progesterone in men. I've come across that. Other things, the prostate enlargement, you yourself taught me about that. Could you talk about prostate enlargement and progesterone?
Well, nobody needs an enlarged prostate, but
doesn't help.
It's extremely common in men. It's probably caused by two different hormones. One is estrogen, and the other is what's called dihydrotestosterone, can cause prostate enlargement. So let's go one step further and talk about prostate cancer. And I think men really should be aware of this because most men, if they live long enough, will have prostate cancer. But what's really important to understand that basically only 7% of cancer spread. So most men die with prostate cancer rather than from it. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, which brings up this idea about the PSA test, and now this, you know, there are a lot of people that say you should never have it done, and I don't agree with that. I think all men should have a PSA test, but they have to be careful. If the PSA is elevated, the most common reason for that is just what they call benign prostatic hypertrophy. In other words, it's just due to benign enlargement. But even if it's a cancer, you know, they have to keep in mind that it's very rare that this cancer is going to spread. But if you're referred to a urologist, you can guarantee that they're going to want to do a biopsy. And it's not just doing a biopsy. They do 12 to 24 sticks into the prostate. Mm-hmm. And it's my own personal feeling that it's during the prostate biopsy that the cancer actually spreads into the bloodstream and throughout the body. And so, obviously, I do not recommend prostate biopsies. There are other ways of determining if somebody has a cancer. A very simple way, at least to think about it, is that when they do a PSA test, they can do a free PSA. And if the free PSA is low, that's usually a pretty good indication that it may actually have a cancer there. But even then, you know, there's a thing called watchful waiting. Yes. You know, there are ways to slow down the spread of cancer. But there's probably very little that anybody can do in this country, that's not going to provide side effects like incontinence and loss of ability to have erections and whatever. So now in Europe, they have another way of treating prostate cancer where they heat up the prostate. Mm-hmm. It's 95% effective for getting rid of cancer, and it like has zero side effects. And they tried to bring it over here, but the FDA wouldn't allow it.
Now, is that a direct heat up, or is it a total body hyperthermia?
No, it's localized. They insert something in close proximity to the prostate and just heat it up. Mm-hmm. It takes about 2 hours, and I've never experienced it, but compared to the other ways that they treat prostate cancer, this to me is the most effective way of treating it. But they won't allow it in this country.
Now, the thing about hyperthermia that I have heard is that, yes, it does reduce the tumor size, but only for a short period of time, that the tumor then will reoccur. So what you're doing with hyperthermia is buying time. Is that the same with this type of therapy that you're talking about?
Well, that's probably total body hyperthermia.
Yes.
My feeling is that this is almost the most effective way of eliminating the cancer.
Eliminating it.
That's
okay.
My understanding.
Okay. And that's while the cancer...
But, hospitals spend millions of dollars putting in robot surgical techniques and mm-hmm. whatever. And so the FDA is just protecting them, you know, after making these huge investments.
It really is quite appalling because quality of life for men, certainly run into many men who have had it, and it really takes something out of them. And I don't think they're adequately warned in that these things could occur.
I want to go back to where we were. Something was said very important, and it went very quickly, and I want to bring it back to the attention of the audience. Dr. Platt spoke about the most testosterone receptors in the body or in the heart. On your website, I read that men should be aware that almost 100% of men that have heart attacks have been found to be low in testosterone levels. In this
exactly.
Yes, and I think that's a very important statement. I think people should hear that because testosterone, Dr. Ali always would say, that the worst discredit that we did to hormones is call them sex hormones. Because now they could be giggled at or they could be discounted, but they're not appreciated for the work that they do, the necessity of the work that they do in maintaining our health, because they're sex hormones. Why would a woman want testosterone? can we switch it now to women? Why would women want testosterone? What does testosterone do for women?
Well, let me start it. Let's go back to the testosterone in men and the
yes.
heart. You know, they've shown that men who have massive heart attacks always go into congestive heart failure.
Mm-hmm.
But they did a study where when men came in with massive heart attacks, they gave them testosterone, and not one of them went into congestive heart failure.
Oh.
So let's bring that over to women. Now, people have to understand that the number one cause of death in women is heart attacks.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, heart attacks occur as a cause of death 6 times more commonly than any other cause of death. And I suspect it's because when men get older, you know, their testosterone level goes down. But in women, it really goes down. It's almost non-existent. They still produce a little bit of testosterone from the adrenal glands, but not a whole lot. My feeling is that it's a really important hormone to replace in women just from the standpoint of the heart.
Years ago, I heard a lecture, and it was an endocrinologist from Johns Hopkins. Oddly enough, she pointed out that if you are treating women for heart issues, that she suggested a higher, just out of the normal ranges, and her ranges were higher, like a lab range of over 120 for women, if you indeed wanted to make any effect on the heart. And I think we have to keep in mind not only are hormones all over the place doing things, they concentrate in one part of the body or the other. There's a stronger impact here, less impact there. It's not linear, like this much of a certain hormone, if you have a blood level, is good enough for everything. It just isn't.
I just saw a lab level just recently, and they've reduced the level in women again. They went down to, yes, they went down from 3 and elevated is in the 40s. When I was beginning to see testosterone levels in women, they were 20 up to 98.
Yes, yes.
And then
that.
They went from 7 to in the 60s, and now they've gone from 3 into 45. And women who get 45, they're worried. Maybe I'm too high. Maybe my voice is going to drop. I'm going to get pimples on my face. And yet, what has happened? It's so uncommon to even see women at 45.
It truly is appalling. And I think we've talked about this before about labs actually lowering their normal ranges, both men and women. For hormones, the normals are not adequate. It's an average of probably some fairly sick people that they routinely test.
Dr. Platt,
it's not good.
What area do you shoot for in relationship to women? Are you looking at just how people feel, or are you looking at their labs? And what would you recommend practitioners shoot for in terms of numbers? Yes, Dr. Platt.
Okay, you have to remember that I always prefer treating people to, you know, I
yeah.
look at lab, but I treat people.
Great.
And because, you know, frankly, you can never go wrong treating a person, but you can go awfully wrong trying to treat a lab test.
Yep.
And, it you know, because levels change all the time and who knows what's affected them. But if you have somebody on, a woman on testosterone, women need two hormones for libido. You know, one is testosterone, the other is progesterone. So you can just follow how they're doing from a libido standpoint. You can, you know, from the energy, and if they're having side effects, that'll become very apparent. And one of the nice things about creams is that you know you're in charge. You can reduce the dose from instead of every day to every other day or whatever. No, I don't follow. I look at lab tests, but I talk to the patients.
Mm-hmm.
We talked a bit about prostate cancer. Would you like to address breast cancer and hormones? Ever?
Well, I don't recommend it.
No.
Yeah, you know, the incidence of breast cancer around the turn of the last century was like, oh, I don't know, one in, I don't know, something like 84 women, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's down to about 1 in 8. And I think a lot of this has to do with the fact that it's become a very estrogenic world, starting with plastics that have estrogen in it, and cattle and chicken that are given shots of estrogen to fatten them, and then, you know, look at all the women on birth control pills. Just women get exposed to estrogen from all sorts of directions. To me, estrogen, to me, is a very toxic hormone. Not only the cramps, the PMS, the breast tenderness, but, you know, that's where fibroids and endometriosis comes from, and polycystic ovaries and fibrocystic breasts and gallbladder disease and migraine headaches and asthma and lupus and rheumatoid arthritis and phlebitis and six different cancers. To me, it's a toxic hormone. And yet it's the number one hormone that's replaced in women that after they go through the menopause. But the only reason a woman needs to have a high level of estrogen is she's trying to get pregnant. So I'm going to come down off my little platform. So in terms of breast cancer, again, you know, we're looking at estrogen. And, you know, it's interesting when women have breast cancer and, you know, they always report whether they're estrogen receptor site positive or progesterone receptor site positive. Mm-hmm. And when they're told that they're progesterone receptor site positive, they're told to avoid progesterone, which is ridiculous because progesterone does not cause cancer. It actually induces what's called apoptosis of breast cancer cells, which is the death of breast cancer cells. So to my way of thinking, if a woman is progesterone receptor site positive, it should be a strong indication to give them progesterone. But, you know, that's me. Just looking at things logically.
And the opposite, if they don't have progesterone receptor positive breast cancer, the negative ones have a worse prognosis, their disease, than if they had progesterone receptor. So that shows the negative, but not the positive. If people aren't readily getting access to progesterone when they're in this situation.
Very often recommend if a woman does have breast cancer, not only should she be using progesterone cream, but, you know, I recommend that she mix it with iodine, because iodine also causes apoptosis of breast cancer cells. And I've had women who've actually eliminated breast cancer just with that combination of progesterone and iodine applied to the area around where the breast cancer is.
This is Take Charge of Your Health. We're in the middle of a lively and incredibly informative discussion with Dr. Michael Platt. He's the author of The Miracle of Bioidentical Hormones, and it goes on to say how I lost my fatigue, hot flashes, fibromyalgia, osteoporosis, and it goes on for a page more of symptoms. Also the book Adrenal Dominance, A Revolutionary Approach to Wellness, and now the recent book, The Platt Protocol for Hormone Balancing, A Wellness Manual for Healthcare Practitioners. And we'll be right back. And we'll be right back. This is Take Charge of Your Health, and I'm here with my co-host, Carol Peterson, and we're continuing our discussion with Dr. Michael Platt, author of The Miracle of Bioidentical Hormones, his first book, now on its second edition, Adrenal Dominance, A Revolutionary Approach to Wellness, and now the new book, The Platt Protocol for Hormone balancing, and this was written for practitioners. So we're going right back, talking about our favorite subject, hormones, wellness, and body balancing. So enjoy.
Another situation, carcinoma in situ, breast carcinoma in situ, which is not even a cancer, yet continuously getting treated as a cancer.
What is it exactly? Can you explain it?
It's a small, localized ductal carcinoma in situ, in the ducts, little localized tumors that somehow fall in the gray zone. And doctors are apt to tell their patients, well, we better treat it because we don't know what will happen to this. They get some very aggressive breast cancer treatment for something that wasn't a cancer to start out with. We don't make that distinction when they get a diagnosis very often that there
Carol,
is an option.
It's an excellent point. The American Cancer Society loves carcinoma in situ because it really, you know, gives their statistics a boost.
Yeah.
I'm curious about that.
Yeah.
And, you know, but the interesting thing about cancer statistics is that if a person has cancer, like breast cancer, and is still alive 5 years after the diagnosis, they're considered cured. Even if cancer spread all over the body, they're considered cured. And this is called curing cancer with statistics, and because it looks good on their records because they can, you know, get more money support. Nothing has changed a whole lot in terms of how, you know, they're certainly not the way they treat cancer. You know, when they do chemotherapy or radiation therapy, you know, they're not killing the stem cells. Immunotherapy is probably the only way that's going to get rid of cancer completely. All these other types of approaches, you know, they're still doing them. Chemotherapy and radiation therapy, which destroy the immune system.
I would love to change the subject because there was something I know because there was something that I read that I had really never understood before. I was reading it in preparing to speak with you this evening. It has to do with your weight loss program. You say that weight gain, which so many of us experience, is very directly related to hormone imbalance. And you list hormones and how to balance them. But you said this, and I'd love to hear your statement, but I had never really understood this before, that progesterone is an insulin blocker. And we all know that insulin is a hormone that allows us to absorb or take in proteins, but it also surges up with sugars and then brings them into our body. What then happens is we have very significant weight gain with insulin. You said that progesterone is an insulin blocker, and I never understood that before. And you have a whole protocol of how to use progesterone before each meal to reduce the insulin so that the end result is that for the same meal, you're not gaining the weight. Can you explain that to us?
Yeah, people probably need to understand as soon as they put food in their mouth, the body is putting out insulin. And the thing about insulin is that it takes sugar and it puts sugar into fat cells. And then once the sugar goes into the fat cells, it's converted into fat. And then the insulin sits outside the fat cells and blocks its release. It's a fat-storing hormone. So obviously, insulin does have a big effect on weight. But what's interesting is that when it comes to weight and with regard to hormones, I don't have to tell people about thyroid. You know, thyroid controls metabolism in every cell of the body. And then you have insulin that puts on fat around the middle. Then you have estrogen that puts on fat around the hips, thighs, and buttocks. And then you have things like leptin, which helps people know when they're full. And then you have another hormone called ghrelin that actually stimulates the appetite. But to me, the main hormone that creates fat and is responsible for fat is adrenaline. And it's sort of like an unknown hormone, even though everybody's heard about it, but nobody ever talks about it. When it comes to weight, It's the same thing with regard to every condition that people have. If you want to get rid of the problem or the condition, you need to treat the cause of the problem. So when it comes to weight, again, if you don't treat the reason why you're putting on weight, then even if you do lose weight, it's going to come right back on again. The thing about adrenaline is that the reason why the body releases adrenaline is very simple. You know, people think of it as a fight or flight hormone. Mm-hmm. But the primary function of adrenaline is to raise sugar levels for the brain. And people don't realize that the brain uses more sugar than any other part of the body. Brain can't function, you know, once it's out of fuel. You know, they call that hypoglycemia, low blood sugar, and mm-hmm. you know, people yep. get real sleepy. But any time the body detects mm-hmm. a low amount of fuel in the brain, it just simply puts out adrenaline to raise sugar level. What's interesting is that the primary time of day, if you will, that the body puts out adrenaline is 2:30 in the morning. And the reason for that is the brain is out of fuel then. And what happens is when the body releases adrenaline, it creates stress. Then the body responds to stress by putting out another hormone called cortisol. And people very much are aware that cortisol does cause weight gain, and it does. Because the first thing cortisol does when it's released, it again raises sugar levels through a different process than adrenaline does. But while people are sleeping or trying to sleep, they're putting out two hormones that raise sugar levels, and they're not burning it up because they're just lying there in bed. And the thing about sugar, it doesn't matter if you're eating it or if the body's making it, if you don't burn it up, all that sugar gets stored in your fat cells as fat. And I suspect that adrenaline is the number one cause of weight gain compared to all other causes, that adrenaline is number one. You know, and the sad thing is it's the easiest type of weight gain to control.
Really?
Just by reducing adrenaline. Because when you reduce adrenaline, you reduce cortisol at the same time.
But so, you reduce adrenaline by getting into a Zen situation with no stress, right? But you can
well,
also reduce
that means a Band-Aid.
But you can also reduce it with progesterone, right?
Well, it's just, if you want to reduce adrenaline, you have to approach it from the reason why the body is releasing it. So if you know that the body is putting out adrenaline to provide fuel to the brain, then mm-hmm. what you need to do is provide the fuel yourself rather than rely on adrenaline to provide the fuel. What makes it simple when it comes to adrenaline, there's only two reasons why the body puts out adrenaline. One is if you're in danger, but that's a very rare reason why the body puts out adrenaline. Remember, that primary reason the body's releasing adrenaline is just to raise sugar level. The brain uses two different fuels. One is glucose, which is the type of sugar that the brain uses. And the best source of glucose, I wish I could say candy and soda, but the best source of glucose for the brain comes from vegetables. And the reason why they're a good source is because they're low glycemic. They don't produce a lot of insulin. Candy and soda are great sources of glucose, but they produce a lot of insulin, which actually lowers the sugar level. So it defeats the purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So one fuel is glucose, and then the other fuel are called ketones. And I'm sure a lot of people are aware of the ketogenic diet, which I don't recommend because it's a very hard diet to adhere to. But you can get ketones from either coconut oil, which is a great fuel for cooking because it has a high heat threshold, or MCT oil, which can be added to anything, including coffee, which they call bulletproof coffee. But it can be put into yogurt, or it can be made a salad dressing with vinegar, and whatever. Once people are providing the right fuel to the brain, and they're using a 5% progesterone cream, which is the strength you need to block adrenaline, in 24 hours, you get a significant drop in adrenaline. You know, people that have road rage, which is only caused by excess adrenaline, that goes away in 24 hours.
So
even in children that are bedwetters, which is only caused by excess adrenaline, that also goes away in 24 hours. You can get rid of ADHD in 24 hours because that's only caused by excess adrenaline. You know, fibromyalgia is, again, another condition caused by excess adrenaline. That takes anywhere from 3 days to 3 weeks. But it's curable, even though the 10 million people in this country with fibromyalgia have all been told there's no cure for it. But doctors, they're not trained to treat to cure illness. They're just trained to give out Band-Aid.
Now, I'm confused. And I'm a little confused.
So I
need a little help on this one. In that you're talking about adrenaline in lack of focus, and you're talking about adrenaline as a weight gainer, but you also have a protocol where 3 minutes before you eat, you're giving progesterone. How is adrenaline affected there? And also in, because you said the majority of time adrenaline is not fight or flight, how are all these other problems being created by adrenaline while people are eating and doing whatever they're doing and maintaining their blood glucose?
Right. Okay, so you have progesterone being used just before you eat, and the reason there, again, is to block the insulin that's going to be created once you start putting food in your mouth. But also, the body will still be producing adrenaline throughout the day. Again, the progesterone will be blocking the insulin and adrenaline, but the main reason for blocking insulin, it's another way of controlling adrenaline, because when that insulin goes up and blood sugar drops, the body will be putting out more adrenaline to raise your sugar level back up again. Mm-hmm. So it's all geared toward blocking adrenaline and insulin. I, for myself, in the old days, before I started getting involved with hormones, I used to, every time I was driving, I would have to slap my face trying to keep my eyes open. And that was because I was producing too much insulin. And, you know, I've been using progesterone for many, many years. And ever since the day that I started using progesterone, I have never gotten sleepy in a car.
Really?
So even though there's nothing in the literature that says that progesterone blocks insulin, I know it does.
This is a very common thing you referred to before, where people go to sleep and they wake up in the middle of the night and they can't go back to sleep. I read some very old medical literature, and it was called liver insomnia. And the cure for that was to put an apple at your bedside. And when that happened in the middle of the night, where your thoughts are racing and you can't get back to sleep, just eat the apple and you should be able to go back to sleep. So what you're telling us here is adrenaline is probably the cause of that insomnia in the middle of the night. And your body's perhaps gone to a low glucose level, and it pops into, let's get more glucose to the body and the brain, and now you have adrenaline to cope with. What do you think?
Like I said, you know, adrenaline peaks at 2:30 in the morning, and so one of the ways of controlling that is to eat something right before you go to sleep.
Uh-huh.
And usually I recommend something like leftover vegetables from dinner. And use some progesterone cream right before that, and people should sleep throughout the whole night. This whole thing about adrenaline, it's why people get up at night to urinate, and why people have restless leg syndrome, why people grind their teeth at night. This is all adrenaline. And people that have excess adrenaline almost always carry tension in the back of their neck. And that muscle tension in the neck can cause tinnitus and severe headaches. And these severe headaches are always diagnosed as migraines, but actually it's called occipital neuritis, and those are easy headaches to eliminate. Migraines, not so easy, but I would say that 80% of people that think they have migraines actually have occipital neuritis, and it's a headache that nobody ever mentions. And look at all the women, you know, that have what they advertise it on television as an overactive bladder. Mm-hmm. And now they're getting Botox injections in their bladder, which means they have to self-catheterize for the next 3 months. Every time they have to urinate, they have to use a catheter. But actually, that type of urgency, is adrenaline. You can get rid of it in 24 hours.
But like interstitial cystitis, are you talking about?
Well, that's a whole different ballpark. And again, I call that fibromyalgia of the bladder, and it's only caused by excess adrenaline, and you can get rid of that in about 2 weeks, even though doctors say there's no cure for it.
And you can get rid of it by using progesterone
by lowering adrenaline.
See,
what happens is, you know, the adrenaline gives women that urge to urinate, but a lot of women, like teachers, they can't run to the bathroom every 30 minutes, so they keep their bladder muscles tense. And those tense muscles in the bladder build up lactic acid, which causes that severe pain and the burning when they urinate. So just by lowering adrenaline, you take away that frequency, and it gives the bladder time to heal. You know, it's not hard to get people well. You just have to treat the reason why they're not well. And unfortunately, for the most part, our medical system doesn't allow doctors to have an understanding of the causation of illness. because drug companies won't allow it.
Just heard about a woman who had some sort of surgery because of her longtime pain with interstitial cystitis. It contrasts that with, let's look for the cause, which I'm sure her providers or physicians never really looked for an underlying cause and treated that. They probably put a lot of Band-Aids on. After the surgery wasn't successful, they just sent her home.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, it's just shocking.
I mean, look at all the people that wind up on drugs and alcohol. And again, probably 90% of them do drugs and alcohol just to relax from adrenaline, which is a very powerful hormone. So they wind up in detox and rehab, and they can get off the drugs and alcohol, but nobody deals with why they're on the drugs and alcohol in the first place. So they, once they leave, they go back to drugs and alcohol.
The addicted person, because they're doing their best to self-medicate, an impossible situation for them.
Now, I see many people who have addiction, but addiction to food, where they compulsively eat. Have you dealt with that at all?
Well, remember, the brain craves sugar.
Okay.
So, again, you can get rid of that craving just by giving the brain the fuel that it really needs, which is glucose from vegetables and ketones. Otherwise, if they're not eating correctly, if they're not providing the right fuel, they're going to crave sugar.
Which in turn will increase the insulin, which will in turn knock down your sugar.
Exactly. So it's not a perfect world. I should probably point that out.
Or we would need to be talking. So this is just a fundamental thing. Why haven't we been paying attention to adrenaline? You have said there's a good side to adrenaline, and people like adrenaline. And those people who love, like, dangerous sports, they get an adrenaline high.
Right.
Why don't we talk about that for a minute?
Well, there are positive aspects to adrenaline. It allows people in the military and law enforcement to do what they do. And certainly every professional athlete has to have excess adrenaline to do what they do. And so these are positive type things that where adrenaline does fit in. And in my book, Adrenaline Dominance, I talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly. And the only condition that I put in the good section is ADHD. And a lot of people wouldn't consider ADHD a good thing, but when you consider that the most intelligent, successful, creative people in the world have ADHD, how bad can it be? And it's important for people to understand that ADHD is not a learning disorder, it's an interest disorder. If children with ADHD are not interested, they will not focus. You know, the adrenaline as a neurotransmitter makes their mind go very quickly, so they get distracted very easily. But once you lower adrenaline, now they can focus on everything and they become number one in their class. And the most successful people in the world actually have two different types of ADHD. This is the typical type ADHD plus what they call ADD. And people with ADD, these are, you know, attention deficit disorder where they're not hyperactive. But these are creative type people. And creative people always have the most adrenaline, always. If you look at the creative people in the music industry, look at all the drugs and alcohol, if you think about it. But when people have that combination of ADHD and ADD, you know, the heads of every major corporation have what I call this mixed type of ADHD, and probably very few of them, if any, ever finished college, and yet they're the heads of major corporations. So there are some good sides to adrenaline, but
so there's a lot of downsides. So there's creativity involved with that hormone.
Yeah. It enhances creativity a lot, and that, you know. So whenever I deal with people, it's important for me to determine if they are creative type people. And there's a lot of different types of creativity, but you know, it starts in the womb. This adrenaline, you know, mothers that have children or a fetus that kicks a lot, that's adrenaline. And these are the babies that'll probably have to develop colic, because colic is all about adrenaline. and you could eliminate colic in about 3 minutes just by rubbing progesterone cream on the belly. And as I mentioned before, you know, bedwetting in children, and you only see that in creative-type children, can be eliminated in 24 hours. I'm just saying, you know, there, you know, it just reinforces that if you treat the cause of a problem, you can get rid of it.
Now, we started out a little bit on progesterone for men. How would you dose? Yeah, that's where we began. We're going full circle here. How would you dose a man?
I think that whatever works. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's interesting. But it could be, you know, I would suspect that he also had a lot of adrenaline to begin with, and that the progesterone helped moderate that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, he's pretty driven.
HCG is similar to luteinizing hormone from the pituitary gland, and luteinizing hormone stimulates testosterone and progesterone, both in men and women.
So
we're stymied. But he's been doing better with progesterone.
He's been doing much better with progesterone. And I thought of adding progesterone after we spoke to you last on the radio. And so I learned to the degree that he needed progesterone, and that's when I started adding it. I always give progesterone in my hormone balancing protocols, but often not in men, but now I'm really seriously looking at that and beginning people on low levels. What level would you give a male?
Of what?
Progesterone.
Well, again, 5% seems to be the magic strength. That's the exact strength you need to block adrenaline and insulin, and it's the best strength to block estrogen. Progesterone in a lower strength can actually act like estrogen because it goes to estrogen receptor sites. And to begin with, I usually have people use it 4 times a day until their adrenaline symptoms go down, and then I start decreasing it.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So, Dr. Platt, I always learn. I love having you here.
Okay.
I want to thank you. I looked at your website, and that's plattwellness.com. Is that it?
Uh-huh. Plattwellness.com.
And I was really pleased with the information that you're sharing with people, and there's so much to learn there. So could you give us your website again, please?
It's www.plattwellness.com.
P-L-A-T-T.
P-L-A-T-T Wellness. And if people have questions, they could call the office at 760-836-3232.
Thank you so much.
And now would be a good time for them to go to the website because we have that progesterone cream on sale and they get free shipping.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Dr. Platt, it's always interesting to have a discussion with you. You just kind of machine gun us with these pearls, amazing pearls. So many things are just popping out of your mouth that's useful for so many people. I hope our listeners have taken good note. There's so much application for them to take their health into their hands and do some research on adrenaline. I'd like to recommend our listeners read your book. I have recommended your adrenaline book so many times because, as you say, Dr. Platt, people do not have an awareness of adrenaline, not even in the whole medical profession. Are they thinking about adrenaline as you are?
So the three books.
And people should also be aware that adrenal fatigue is a condition that doesn't exist. It's a misnomer because it's a naturopath diagnosis because they do saliva tests. And when people have a lot of adrenaline, you can't do a saliva test because the adrenaline cuts off the blood supply to the salivary gland, just like it causes cold hands and cold feet and irritable bowel syndrome. But so just want to let people be aware of that.
Well, that's interesting.
So, adrenal fatigue is really adrenaline dominance. And this is the only book that ever talks about excess adrenaline. So if they want to know about adrenaline, they're stuck with that.
We've been speaking with Dr. Michael Platt, the author of The Miracle of Bioidentical Hormones and author of Adrenal Dominance, A Revolutionary Approach to Wellness, as well as the new book, The Platt, P-L-A-T-T, Platt Protocol for Hormone Balance. So I hope you've enjoyed the show, and thanks so much for listening. Thank you so much, and it's always a pleasure. And thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing this time with us, and we'll be
back. You guys can go home early tonight.
Back next week. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Adios. Take care.
Bye-bye. In conclusion, I'd like to say, remember, this information is not an attempt to diagnose or a substitute for treatment. As always, we urge you to take this and all other information we share with you up with your healthcare practitioner. Clearly, this comes under the category of taking charge of your health. You can hear this program in its entirety on my Facebook, Corinne Fornari, RPA CCN, or on Take Charge of Your Health Facebook page, Take Charge of Your Health. My website is fornarihealth.com, and my office number is 212-219-0700. That's 212-219-0700. And I know many of you noticed that beautiful music, a big change. My brother's group wrote it for me. Left Hook from Redding, California. Their website is Redding Left Hook. Really special. Thank you so much for spending this time with us, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.